Zero symptoms, nothing. Soccer refereeing and CrossFit happened to change physicians who recommended, well, you're 66, here's a test, CT scan. Bad news, you need surgery. Because of all the personal development training and just my optimistic view of life, I'm like, we're going to set a goal of the fastest recovery for a CrossFit athlete and soccer referee who's 66-year-old from triple bypass surgery ever. And we're going to document the whole journey. The firm was set up. They didn't miss me. I don't think. They were happy I came back, but they didn't really miss me. I was no longer, fortunately, integral to the operations of the firm. Pretty cool place to be.
Welcome to Hitting the Ceiling, the show for entrepreneurs and leaders who refuse to let a ceiling become the end of their story. The story starts with a lawyer who's built everything around himself, a solo practitioner who was good at the work, but trapped by it. Ben's a personal injury attorney who spent more than four decades in the courtroom and more than 20 years teaching other lawyers how to actually run a business. His son, Brian, is his integrator and 50-50 partner, and together they're building something most law firms never become, a real business that can run without the founder in the middle of everything. Ben, welcome to the show. So, Ben, you started practicing law in 1983. You were using carbon paper and typewriters. At some point, you went from being a solo practitioner to building a real firm. Walk me through the moment you realized the business needed to be something bigger than just you.
Yeah, so my journey was, you know, for the first 12 years, I did work for another firm. And so I started a firm, literally, Mark, me and one assistant, working, and this was 30 years ago, so we just celebrated our 30th birthday as a firm, working about 4.5 days a week because we didn't have enough work to do the rest. And I quickly learned that while I was a good lawyer, I knew nothing about running a business. And I made so many mistakes. I didn't know anything about even marketing and hiring and firing and building a culture and building a team because you're taught in law school. Like, nobody could do this stuff but a lawyer. Like, nobody could think about cases but a lawyer. I mean, I realized I wasn't good enough, right, as a business person. But it was a long time to find, like, the path out. I really started to hang out with entrepreneurs in other industries, Mark, and ask them, how do you get clients, customers, and patients? How do you keep them? How do you manage a team? How do you build that? And so that was the beginning of building something, which is Ben Glass Law today, which is a fairly powerful force in Virginia and on the East Coast. But it was a hard journey because you didn't even know where to go to turn. You didn't even know, like, there was no books for lawyers about this stuff.
It's really interesting because I've been to business school and kind of gone through that process. But even going to business school, it doesn't really teach you how to run a truly great company, to lead and manage teams and to build a company that wins. It's one thing to read about a case study, but it's a whole other deal to go and actually do it.
It is. And so, you know, the first step of my journey out was to really get good at marketing. And so I attached myself to some gurus and found groups and got good at, you know, how could I attract clients without a huge budget, right? And, you know, it really wasn't until the last 7 years where we started to get coaching specifically on now building a great company. And what we're good at now, and we teach this to other lawyers, is how do you build a small law firm that's not going to have a giant advertising budget, not going to spend millions on TV or now, today, all the rage, digital advertising. But how do you build a company that makes your family happy that you became a lawyer and that you became a law firm owner? Like, that's my second company, but that's what we have learned and what we teach.
So a couple of questions. I think you got to share a little bit of the sauce here with who are the gurus that you followed around marketing and who are the people that really influenced that thinking? And why did you start with marketing in the first place?
So when I left my old firm, took some cases with me. These are personal injury cases and back in the day, medical malpractice cases where you only get paid if you win. So we're not a billable hour law firm. Almost 100% of our money even today comes because we win your case and we take a percentage of what we're getting from the insurance company. That becomes number one problem to solve because nothing else matters doesn't matter how good a lawyer you are if you don't have clients coming in the door. And so I was fortunate to find Dan Kennedy. Dan and I have become very good friends over the years. He's spoken a couple times at our conferences. But Dan's sort of specialty in the world was teaching, it was really cool, two levels, teaching business owners, the lawyer, the carpet cleaner, the bagel bakery, the hairdresser, whatever, how to stand out in a crowded market. If you take everything Dan teaches down to one thing, it's like, look around what everybody else is doing and don't do that. Like, we have to figure out how to be interesting people in other ways. Like, and so Dan teaches a lot of direct response marketing, how to be creative, how to have follow-up sequences, and we can talk about that if you'd like. But then Dan's real secret sauce was then taking that universe of his customers who learned how to build a better business through marketing and saying, you know what? You could go and create a second business. You can go and teach this to other lawyers in my case. And so, and it was when I started to get into rooms and both conferences, but also mastermind groups, Mark, with other entrepreneurs, and then you find out all business is the same. We have to generate a lead, convert the lead, make a sale, do the production, have happy client, patient, customer, whatever it is. And so I started to ask, because the answers were not inside of legal. Again, there were no books for lawyers on how to build a fabulous business where you make money and close the lights at 5 o'clock every night. Like, that's opposite of what most lawyer life is like, actually. We started hanging, asking curious questions, and then always saying this, Mark. It's like, huh, Mark just gave me a great idea he's using to, I don't know, sell bagels, whatever. How could I take that idea and bring it into legal? Not every idea will translate into the legal space, but a lot of them did. And so things like, let's go write a book. Let's become an authority. Let's do multi-step follow-up, in those days, letters by mail. Let's send what we call shock and awe packages to a new lead, a box of things that are both educating but also letting the lead know that we are the wise man or woman at the top of the mountain. That is what changed everything for us, because we were able to get the cases in. Of course, we were good lawyers, but Mark, there's good lawyers on every corner. There's lawyers on every corner, right?
That's right.
So most of them are pretty good. And so we believe that we are marketers and entrepreneurs who happen to be, our deliverable is legal services. That was a mind shift, right? That the marketing is the important thing to keep the firm doors open. But as we talked about earlier, like, the marketing then creates all these other problems that the business owner has to solve, learn how to solve.
Now, when you think about when you first started down the path of going on a search, so there must have been some impetus to go and say, I need more, I want to grow this business, I want to scale this business. And I often find that ceiling usually happens on a personal level where you're just not getting what you want from your business on a personal level. Was there a moment where you looked around and thought, hey, I'm a great lawyer, I'm a terrible business owner? What was sort of the impetus for that search, that growth orientation to go find how to get through to the next level?
I think the impetus is, as you become a better lawyer and you develop a reputation and you become good at marketing, like, more stuff just starts coming through the door, right? And so when everything is dependent on you for the production of the legal services, that's impossible to scale, right? Because you're a one person with the same 24 hours that everybody else has. What happens to most lawyers is then we steal. We steal from our families. We steal time from our families. And so you go home and after dinner you are, you know, working or on your devices today. On the weekends you're sneaking into the office, you know, to go work. It's the easiest thing to give away is your time, and you're taking it from spouse, children, whatever. And it's so normalized in law that most of the profession thinks this is what you signed up for. Of course it's hard. This is what you signed up for. And so that was the real turning point. I mean, the marketing creates the problem, and you steal from the family, and then the family is like, man, this isn't really good that you're a good lawyer because we don't see you. And I don't know if we said this, but I have 9 children. They're adults now, but, lots of kids is a lot of energy needed to spend at home.
You kind of created your own problem, right? You got really good at marketing. You broke through that first ceiling, and then you got so good at marketing, you had to go deliver all of that. And so now you're spending a lot more time doing the practice of law that you created for yourself, but you're also growing and scaling the business at the same time. And so you mentioned about 7 years ago, you discover EOS through the book Traction by Gina Wickman. You said that you've been running it religiously in both your businesses now. But can you take me back to the beginning where you first read the book and you read that you need to do this 90-minute leadership team meeting every single week? And, you know, you're probably like, where in the world am I going to fit all this? What was your reaction to the systems, the processes, and the discipline that you read in the book?
I had actually given the book out, and then a friend said, you ought to read the book you just gave out. It was Traction. So, okay, let me read this. And so then we go and we Google and we find EOS. And I'm reading, every week we have a 90-minute level 10 meeting. I'm like, there's no way. I don't have enough time right now to run my life. And you're telling me that every week we have an L10 meeting for 90 minutes and we're going to devote a day for a quarterly meeting and we're going to devote 2 days for an offsite retreat. Okay, this will be fun. And then we made the next kind of amateur, like, I can do this myself, right? Because I'm an entrepreneur. I can self-implement this. I can stay one chapter ahead in Traction and try to run these meetings and be an expert on Traction, which I knew nothing about, or expert on EOS, and run the meeting. So that lasted for about like 4 days. So then we, I think the sequence was, we went on the website, we found some local implementers who came and did the 90-minute intro talk.
Well, the 90-minute meeting.
The 90-minute meeting, yeah. Well, it makes you feel, it really makes you feel naked. Like, oh my gosh, my business, like a business is supposed to actually look like this and run like this, like you have our, fill out our little score sheet. That's really cool, but impossible. And so that was a mindset thing. And so at the same time, let me just add this. So my son at this point has joined the firm, had having practiced in another law firm, but saw that we were still growing because the marketing was working, the cases were coming in. It was just very disorganized. Wanted to get on the rocket ship because his firm, if they were good, but they didn't talk about long-term vision. They didn't talk about, what are we really building here? I mean, they're a good firm, but not really building a business. So he came over and he brought cases with him. And so now there's chaos on top of chaos because he brings people with him too. And the line outside my door is very long because Ben is the only one who can answer any question about the firm. Mindset, right? Mindset mistake. And so that's a very long answer to your question, but this is how we find EOS, find our first implementer, and start to get into and commit. Commit because at the time, like, and many people probably think this as well, like, well, this is expensive, quote unquote, expensive to have a coach. And we have invested heavily over the years in coaches. And, you know, I've always found that the promise is from the coaches, if I do my job, this expense will become irrelevant. True, and absolutely true for us on our EOS journey. We had our first implementer, Randy Tosig, who is frigging awesome. Let me introduce you to my friend Ross. And so Ross Fossa became our implementer, and that's the big arc of the story. Of course, there's a lot of pain and suffering in the middle parts, but that's how we got to where we are today.
It's a very pretty typical story. People start to self-implement the tools because you're on a search, right? You're an entrepreneur. You're on a search. You want to break through. And yes, we are rugged individualists. We really believe that we can solve any problem. And the result of that is, I love how you described, you know, the people lined up outside your door because they have to come to you to get the answers to any and all questions about the firm and probably many more things in addition to that. And there, while it might feel really good, right, it validates our worth and our identity and all those different types of things, you train all your people to, quite frankly, be stupid. Like, they don't even have to, I call it intellectual laziness, right? Why bother thinking about it when I can just ask Ben? He's going to give me, he's like the predecessor to ChatGPT.
Right. And that's not a good space for visionaries. I mean, there's a certain level with any business, like this is just how small businesses start. In almost every case I've ever seen. But again, if you're good at the deliverable and you're good at the marketing and you start to get good at operations, it just, the way I put this, Mark, is that as a business grows, you're always now playing in a place where you've never played before. It's like going from the AA in baseball to AAA to the Major League Baseball. It's all professional, but at MLB, it's a different game. And so business grows, you're always, this is kind of the cool thing, you're always playing, you're always being challenged by the game at the next level. And I do CrossFit, right? And so I've done that for 6 or 7 years. And CrossFit's kind of the same thing, is that no matter how strong you get or how good you get at the movements, there's always more weight or more repetitions that you can put on the bar, right? And you're always challenging and a little bit sore and a little bit tired. That's what I think a growing business is. You know, one of the things I say is that people, Mark, that travel with you from one level to the next level are many times not the people who can travel to the next level with you. And this is not often spoken about much, I think, in small business, but it's hard. When you run a small business and you know your people, you know, when you're, we're still 25 or 30 people, right? You know everybody. You know their stories. You know their spouses. And yet the business reality is that it's very rare that someone is going to stay with you through your different levels of growth.
I think that's true, because when you hit that ceiling and then your part of the team might be able to break through that ceiling and the other parts can't. You can't. Some people just can't read enough books. They can't listen to enough podcasts. They can't go to enough classes to learn fast enough to keep up with the growth of the organization. Those just create all sorts of very, very difficult situations. Now, when we talk about people, and you talked about your son, Brian, coming in from one of your competitors, bringing cases and bringing chaos along with it because of that growth, because of that, you know, trying to figure a way out of that feeling of being stuck and a little bit frustrated, things are chaotic. Fast forward, he's now your 50-50 partner and he's your integrator, your second in command. What was the hardest thing about giving your own kid real authority, including the authority to be the tiebreaker in the business and overrule you if it's a hung decision?
He reminds me that he is the tiebreaker.
Often, I am sure.
Yeah, so this has been quite a fascinating, fun journey. And people should understand, I think, that first, my wife, his mom, is the ultimate tiebreaker, just so we know, just so we're really,
really clear. I mean, you really get that out there just to right? be on the same page with the whole world.
Right. And so what I think people should know is that we each have individual also mindset personal development coaches. So we have, again, we've invested corporately in EOS and business coaching, but we also have mindset coach over here, right? And we are good at open and honest conversation, same page meetings, to use an EOS term. Are you good? How are you feeling? What do you need from me? The easier part of all of this, Mark, is I'm a natural visionary. He has called me the most optimistic person he ever has met. Like, numbers and spreadsheets and even dashboards, like, they make me a little jittery. But they energize Brian. He's really, really good at that. And so it has been hard, particularly in the marketing realm, where I grew this thing by becoming an expert in marketing for solo and small law firms. And we have a full-time in-the-house marketing director. I still call her my youngin'. And I'll tell you, the hardest part was those times when the visionary's ideas are exploding before 8 o'clock in the morning with all of the ideas of things that we could do marketing. And they are, Brian and Lauren, are conspiring, air quotes around that word, conspiring against me to say, but we can't do all of those things at the same time all by noon, right? Which is what a visionary expects. You know, because you talked about people there for a second, and it's really hard for an entrepreneurial visionary to wonder how come the rest of the world doesn't want to read 20 books this week. How come you don't want to go to classes to become a better leader? How come you don't want to hang out in rooms of people doing bigger, better, faster things than you are? That's really hard for people, for someone like me to understand, like, why another human being wouldn't want to be like that. I get it. The world kind of divides into visionaries and those who get real life satisfaction from following directions and, you know, playing to the rules. Like, visionaries don't play to the rules too much. And now we're on the next stage of that journey, Mark. Dad's been at this 42 years. I like it, parts of it. I've done a really good job of eliminating things that I don't like doing or I'm not very good at. And I'm really ruthless about that now. So most of my day is filled with things that I actually like doing. But in 2026, getting out of the litigation of cases, again, I've got youngins who are good at this. We've hired a law firm consultant to help Brian and I transition through partial sale of shares at the end of this year. What does part-time look like? What does retirement look like? We don't really know, because that's the next stage of journey. And part of that journey now, Mark, is Brian moving from integrator to visionary.
Do you plan on hiring a visionary to be Brian's puzzle piece? If he's like full on, does he have some visionary in him where he'll move to the visionary seat and then bring in an integrator?
Yeah. So it is the path that we believe we're on is to hire an integrator. What he has termed at our retreat, 2-day offsite retreat in January, was, I need a battle buddy. I need someone who can get as excited about the work we do and growing the firm as I, Brian, am. And you know, Dad's not going to go away. Dad will still be here, but at some point, Brian will be the visionary. We have a hard time imagining like hiring a visionary, like, and then kind of working for with a visionary who's not your dad or, you know, another sibling, and he doesn't have any other lawyer siblings. So it is finding the integrator, and that may come from inside. We've got some people who are really interested in the integrator type work. It fascinates them and energizes them, which is really, really important. Or it may come from outside. So a lot of firms, you get to our size, $4 and $5 million of top line revenue. A lot of firms have been successful. Mike Morse, who's runs a firm out of Michigan, like, he found his integrator and John Neckhazel, and these are all friends of ours, and it exploded everything. So we'll get there, but our thinking is, yeah, he needs a integrator and not a visionary. He'll be the visionary.
I would definitely encourage you to make sure that Brian is a hardwired visionary or someone who can at least do both effectively, because then he's going to get frustrated. Or the integrator you hire is going to get really, really frustrated if he's kind of like a hardwired, born integrator and won't be able to let go of the integratory stuff.
Yes. So, and part of that will be Brian going through the process, the mindset process that I went through of letting go of the vine, if you're the integrator moving into the visionary seat, by definition, you know, letting go of the things that he's good at, is respected for, energizes him for the good of the company, for the good of the law firm. Mm-hmm. Again, it is one of the hardest things for entrepreneurs, people who have created things in the world and who are still creating things in the world, to let go and to let somebody else shine and use their gifts and talents. We know it is not only possible, but it's the right thing to do. It's still hard.
Oh, super hard. Super hard. Now, with your process of letting go of those things, and Brian in that integrator seat, and then you have Brian's wife, Krista, running HR. And so you've had a lot of things to let go of, systems and processes, to other people, yes, to family members. Has Brian ever made a decision that you just was like, I don't agree with this, but you were able to disagree and commit on? And how did that go?
That's a really great question, because you would have to say there are many decisions where initially, like, I perhaps disagreed on. At the end of the day, we come out of the room aligned. So one of the tensions over time has been, quote unquote, trying to save people. And me sitting there going, my friends in the leadership, we, like, if we're talking about a particular person, we know how this is going to end, because we have just now identified that they are no longer a culture fit. They were good to a certain level. We've grown to the next level. It is not going to work. And sitting here, we look each other in the eye, Mark, we all know exactly how it's going to end, but we try to save them. And those have been areas where I don't want to go back and go, I told you so, but I try to weave it into the next discussion as we talk about the next person for whom we have really, honestly, in our souls determined this is not going to end well. It's not going to be a long-term relationship anymore. We like the person. They have done great for us to a certain level, but it's not working now. But I would think the people issues have been the ones where maybe I see it earlier or am more ruthless. When we use the word ruthless, we don't mean mean, but we mean just objective, like, it's going to work.
Right.
By and large, I have been willing, because I have been successful. I sometimes wonder, like, I don't actually have to work. I'm blessed. I could stop today and I'd be fine. And so, you know, over time, it's like, I want the firm, I want the people we work with to be happy. I want Brian to be happy. You are the tiebreaker. I am here to, at this stage in my life, in my career, I'm here to support this so that the firm is an enduring force, in Virginia and, you know, helps our clients, but most importantly, like, provides a place where people can come to work, do work with people they like, do work they love to do, and do work for people that we like, our client.
Now, do you think that there's some lessons you can teach people and some lessons they have to learn on their own?
I believe that I am the greatest coach in the world, that I could take a C-plus player and make them into an A player. Again, I don't understand why everyone doesn't want to read like 100 books in a year and get a personal development coach and all that stuff. It is objectively not true. So I am deceiving myself. So yes, there are lessons that people have to learn on their own. For whatever reason, they don't just take 100% coaching from me. This is one of the interesting things we're working on right now, which is, hey, we say to our, what I call our youngins, right? So we have people who are working for us who may be going to law school in the future, or they're young lawyers. I'm like, hey, my door is open. Like, and I have all this wisdom and experience. Like, just, I will try to help you. And they don't want to come in. And I say to Brian, like, how come they don't come see me? He goes, well, because you're the wise man at the top of the mountain. Even though you say, my door is open, I'd love to coach you, personal development, whatever. Like, they don't believe it's true because they've never experienced that before in any other place. And so that's a challenge. Like, even getting to trying to teach someone life skills, professional skills, is hard. So, yeah, there's lessons that they need to learn on their own. for sure.
Yeah, and I think sometimes too, as a founder of the firm, you know, your name is on the building, and there's a sense of people not wanting to be open, honest, and vulnerable. The vulnerable piece is really hard to admit you don't know something, and then not only be vulnerable, but then really be open to the coaching without being intimidated, right? And so, hey, I'm just going to go do that. And I think quite a few people struggle with that and the idea that that's possible or that it wouldn't have some repercussions for revealing what you don't know. Right?
And here's the other layer. It's a family-owned law firm. So my wife, Sandy, has done the books. Krista, as you mentioned, is HR. Brian and I are the owners. And so even though to us, like, why is that a barrier? Like, I'm Ben and that's Brian. The perception is, I have learned, it is hard to be vulnerable to Ben if your complaint is, or if the challenge is Brian. And the same thing, if your challenge is Ben and he's bugging the marketing director because she's not implementing the 1,000 ideas before noon every day. And so, you know, I'm a slow learner, Mark. I'm trying just now discovering that this may be a potential barrier to vulnerability for the team. And I haven't fully solved that. Other than to acknowledge it, like, we get it. This is a family-owned law firm. We acknowledge to other members of the leadership team that it might be hard to be vulnerable to bring issues to Brian and I or to the leadership team. And all we can say, Mark, is that we try our very best and we are dedicated to open and honest conversation, to vigorous debate, and to listening. I like to say that I can't make things perfect for you. If you don't know what perfect would look like and you can't communicate that to me, then we have nothing to work towards. But I can try my very best.
Yeah, all the time and making it up as you go. You're the only one that has ever run your business in this very specific point in time with your people, with your customers, and every business is completely and utterly unique, and yet there's some really consistent first principles-based things that are going on in every company. Just as we were talking earlier about the marketing, and it's really applicable to any company anywhere. So I just kind of want to think about, you mentioned Krista is running HR. I believe she's helped you build some really great hiring processes and documentation that you've never had before. And it kind of makes you feel like you're a grown-up now in business. What did it feel like going from running everything by instinct, gut feel, it's all in your head, to having those real systems? Did it feel like you were being boxed in, or was it freedom?
It was freedom, because if you just talk just about the HR space, right, and recruiting and and retaining people, it's like I obviously wasn't very good at it. I failed at that a lot in my entrepreneurial journey, and so to have somebody, and there were times I bristled, like, why are we creating all these rules and things we have to follow, and, you know, adhering to governmental regulations is something that bristles a lot.
Terrible.
It is terrible. So much of it today is just handled by our marketing director. I've learned to allow it to be freeing for me. A lawyer's art is figuring out, like, a strategy for the client. Like, how do we solve the problem or the opportunity that the client has? And the more time that I get to do free thinking about that, this is what we were born to do. And so the more that I'm released from interviewing, like, Brian and I aren't even involved in the interviewing process for anyone except a lawyer who joins us. So the first time we meet a new employee is on, like, day one. And sometime in that first week, we do culture onboarding with Ben. Like, here's the history of the firm and here's what we believe. So at the end of the day, it's freeing. And I was grateful am grateful that we have, good people, who can do so many of the things that I used to do. And I wasn't very good at it.
You've said your vision is to build something that you can just walk away from, still get the checks. You know, you talk about succession, with Brian and what that's going on. But how close are you to that, to really being able to have that self, whether you stay in the visionary seat for 2 years or 5 or 10 more, how close are you for to building that self-managing business where you can just walk away, still get checks coming in?
I think I could walk away today. And I have put it this way to Brian and the team. Like if I didn't have the familial connection, if I was just a partner at a different law firm, like I would probably walk away and go figure out what's next. Like where would I put my energy into the world? So financially and business structure wise, I think I'm there. Now, Brian doesn't. So we have two verticals. We have the personal injury vertical, which he mainly heads up that. And then we have this other one we litigate. We represent claimants in long-term disability insurance claims. So not long-term care, but if you get sick or injured and you can't work, most of us have an insurance policy that will pay a portion of what we were making before. When the insurance company says no, then we fight against them. And our team is really good. They're still fairly young in their professional careers, but they're really good. But he wants to make sure that that vertical will be self-sustaining and self-running. So today, there are still things that Ben is relevant for, and Ben gets access for, about mainly high-level sort of strategic thinking. Not so much the nuts and bolts of how most of the cases go through the system, but we've done some really important work in the federal courts of appeals, and I'm the one that has done those arguments. We have, you know, big cases in there that may have nuanced issues, so it's good to have Ben around to add a perspective. So we are almost there. And then the other thing, you know, he wants me to continue to do is this mentoring of the youngins who are young in the profession. Again, it's that barrier, though, of how do you force mentoring on somebody who's, and the issue is they've never worked in a place like this before, where people actually cared about them as human beings. I truly believe it. Like, we're really good at this, right? And they've never worked in a place where we say, we want to hear your voice. We want to know what you need and want. How can we make your life better? All right? Because at the end of the day, living is important, and you live for your happiness, and work is only a part of life. Right? So it's a necessary part because you have to eat and you have to produce to eat. But it's not the whole thing. And so to the extent that I can continue to shape the what we call the philosophy of living, mm-hmm. With some of these youngins, and demonstrate that by our actions, not so much even by our words, I'm still, I guess, necessary. But we're pretty close. I mean, we have worked for years, again, with personal development, mindset coaches. We've worked with some lawyers who have helped us shape, you know, the paperwork and the structure of how transition to retirement will work, and the mistakes other father-son teams or father-family teams have made. And so we understand the value, Mark, of building a team of professionals who will help us. And we invest pretty significantly in our professionals.
Which is so valuable. I mean, I think the quote is, you know, what if I invest in my people and they leave? And like, well, what if you don't and they stay? Now, you went through heart surgery not that long ago. And for a lot of entrepreneurs, something like that really changes how we see everything. And maybe it's a little bit of a test of, is the firm ready? Because I'm assuming you weren't available the entire time. Did anything change for you in terms of what growth means or in the succession planning, or how did that impact?
It's such an interesting question. So I think actually scary part, 60, so I'm 68 now, 66 years old, zero symptoms, doing soccer refereeing and CrossFit, nothing. Had happened to change physicians who recommended, well, you're 66, you have a little bit of blood pressure issues, a little bit of cholesterol issues, here's a test. It's a coronary artery calcium scan, CT scan, which discovered that I had severe blockages. And severe, like, you don't get to go home. We're going to get to this thing quickly, all right? And the scary part, zero symptoms again. So very fortunate there. However, when I had the final test, which confirmed I would have the surgery, it's on a Friday. I'm in the hospital. The doctor came in and said, you know, why the heck are you here? Because she saw my record, saw how active I was with zero symptoms. I explained the thing. She does her test. She goes, got bad news. You need surgery. So, and that was going to be Monday. So I head over the weekend. I'm in the hospital. And because of all the personal development training and just my optimistic view of life, I'm like, we're going to set a goal of the fastest recovery for a CrossFit athlete and soccer referee who's 66-year-old from triple bypass surgery ever. And we're going to document the whole journey. So your listeners can go on TikTok to the Renegade Lawyer, scroll way back 2 years. You can find the whole story from before the surgery through the entire recovery.
That's amazing.
So it didn't really change anything because some people say, well, you know, taught you about your mortality. I already knew about mortality. Like, I know that you don't know how many days you have. And it wasn't like a giant wake-up call or anything. It was, for me, Mark, it was an opportunity to share that message, first of all, that an optimistic viewpoint of life is the magic medicine that will get you through anything. Right. And the firm was set up. And so we have a funny picture because I'm in the hospital. I have my laptop open. It's before the surgery and I'm working on have the website open. I sent it to my marketing director. I said, well, Lauren, at least like you'll be happy. Like I'll be out of action for a little bit and I won't be bothering you. So that's our kind of our classic picture from that episode. The firm was well set up. There were like zero issues. I did have a record recovery. I documented every step I took, every short run I was able to do, the first time I was back in the gym, the first time I was back on the field, the first time I was back in a level 10 meeting, which was, you know, shortly afterwards, but you're exhausted after the surgery. Yeah. They were happy I came back, but they didn't really miss me. I was no longer, fortunately, integral to the operations of the firm. Pretty cool place to be, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm thankful for the work we had done with our coaches and with our US implementer. And thankful that I had a leadership team that was like, we're good, we got your back. So I was, again, very, very fortunate that this was discovered, very fortunate that the surgery went well, but it really didn't change anything. I am fully aware of my mortality, mm-hmm. Fully aware you don't know how many days you have left. We believe that life is meant to be lived for your own happiness. And I think one of the big things, we didn't talk about this earlier. So Dan Kennedy, my marketing mentor, taught me to give yourself permission to build what you want to build. You don't have to build it the way other lawyers have built it. You don't have to build it the way the profession thinks you ought to build it. You get to build what you want to build. And I think that is freeing. And a lot of business owners, sadly, don't ever hear that. And they think they have to build to a structure of the way everybody else has done it. One of the saddest things for me is to talk to lawyers who at 6 and 7 years into the profession, Mark, are burned out and hate it. And they now call themselves reformed lawyers. And the sad part is that they've never seen what the alleyway that we are on. They've never seen the solo and small firm life where the lights are out at 5, no one's here on weekends, we do great work, we make good money, and we like each other. Like they've just never even heard that this such a thing can exist. And my life's work is to show, particularly lawyers, but others, here's my permission to build something that serves you and your family. Let's start there to be happy. If you do that, you'll attract people. And if you serve your employees, build a place that they like to come to work, then if those two things are true, you're happy, employees are happy, the clients will be well served. And lawyers in the law profession and law school tends to flip that and put the client up at the top and make the lawyer the self-sacrificial lamb. And that's why there's such a depression and unhappiness index, a high index for lawyers. is that they have it backwards. It's okay to build what you want to build, no matter whether it's a space in a profession, such as a teacher, or a business owner, such as professional services. I represent a lot of doctors, Mark, and the most accomplished doctors who are 50 years and over are still working very, very hard. They see lots of patients. I guess it's really hard to scale for them to scale their medical work.
So, kind of moving in the home stretch here as we conclude our conversation. You've got 9 kids. You coach other lawyers. You referee soccer every single week. You've got grandchildren. You run 2 companies. And most people will look at that list and just think, well, that is superhuman. Like, how is this possible? It's got to be impossible. And talking about that quality of life of the type of business that you're running, you're getting what you want from your business because you've designed it that way. It's highly, highly intentional, obviously. What are some of the secrets that you use to kind of manage your time, protect your time? We've carried these computers around in our pockets that have a never-ending ability to get our attention. How do you protect your time while still growing the business and getting what you want from it?
So Dan Kennedy and I co-authored a book called No BS Time Management for Entrepreneurs. And I am ruthless. Again, doesn't mean you're mean, but I'm ruthless about protecting time. So one of the big things I did 20 years ago when I read the first edition of that book was no unplanned inbound phone calls. Like, everything is scheduled now. I'm good at time blocking. I say no to a lot of stuff. So one of the things that happens, Mark, people who produce and people who are creators get asked to do a lot. And oftentimes there's a sort of a guilt edge to the ask, like, come and help with this charity or this religious institution or these people. And I'm good at selecting things that I think will energize me. So it's really weird to say that you're energized by soccer refereeing and being in the middle of a high school game with a highly competitive, rivalry where everything is exploding, maybe. It's weird, but that's part of the art that I like to do is in that space. So I say no to a lot. For example, walking in a Home Depot gives me hives. I don't like tools. I don't use tools. I'd much rather overpay somebody and make their life better because they have the skill set and the guts to get on the roof to fix something or to paint something. And I think that's the way the world goes around. Like, that's how I put energy into the world. I employ people to do things that I don't like doing. And I don't care if other people think that that's unmanly, right? Or husbands should know how to paint bedrooms. Not my jam, all right? One of the things with employees, remember we had the chaos of the line outside the door, is to really, employees will need you. And so then the discipline becomes, great, we're going to have office hours and there'll be time when I'm available. But if you come with a question, you have to come with the 3 answers that you think we should do and tell me which one is best, right? Because A, it forces people to think. So as you said earlier, they're not just going, well, Ben will know the answer. I don't need to think. 2, they develop confidence when you keep saying, Mark, that's great. Go do that one. Mark, that's great. Go do that one. And Mark doesn't come back with the same question about a different case later because now Mark has confidence. And then the other thing that I've been really good at is when we're having, a client call, and even someone like who might be mad, it's rare, but somebody gets upset and, something needs fixed. It's like, I have an audience in the room. Like, we put it on speakerphone. So the team understands what the answer is and how Ben talks to people, right? How we talk to clients who may be upset. So there is not just me reporting to you what the conversation was, but you getting to see Ben in action, you getting to come to court to see Ben in action, things like that. Again, it gets back to my life philosophy. Life is meant to be lived in your happiness. Why are we screwing around with doing things that we don't like doing? Now, that doesn't always go over really well the first time you say it at home. Like, I am not going to do that. And understanding from a mindset side that the world is better when you, whoever's listening to this, when you are doing what you like doing and what you're really good at, your unique ability, Dan Sullivan and EOS, right? The world is made better the more that each of us can do that. And the last thing I'll say on this, Mark, is for everything I don't like doing and I'm not good at, there is a world of people, and they can be anywhere in the world. We have 5-6 people in the Philippines who work for us, working on our economy. They make more money working for Ben Glass Law than they would in their own local economy. They get to work with really cool people, and they get to learn things that they probably wouldn't have learned, you know, working in their local market. And so that's win-win-win-win-win all around. And we are unabashedly proud of saying that we don't do things that we don't, that we're not good at and we don't like doing, and that, yeah, we don't like doing.
Ultimately, that's the power of focus, right?
Yes.
Stay in your lane. It is the number one power law there is. Ben, thanks for the conversation. I really appreciate it. And you gave us a lot there around time management and how to delegate well and all those mindset things. But if you can kind of package it up and imagine someone who's watching this, they feel like everything in their business depends on them. They're working nights and weekends, doing the work they don't like for people they don't enjoy. What's that one piece of advice? What is that one thing that you would give them? What's the very first step that they could take action on that would make a difference for them?
That's a hard question. The one thing would be to know that someone else has trod that path in your profession before. So there is someone who is steps ahead of you or maybe a mile ahead of you. Your job is to go find that people because, Mark, highly successful people are really willing to share their secrets to an interested person. So don't waste my time. Come to me with good questions. Come to me as you have with like a ton of research on me and on the firm, right? Know that that person who's ahead of you will share. Your job, though, is to go and to find he or she, oftentimes by doing what I did, which is go mingle with other entrepreneurs outside of your lane, because all businesses are fundamentally the same. So that's what I think. And here's the issue. Like in America, like it's hard to go and find where are we having face-to-face conversations with other human beings. Workplace, maybe. Place of religion, maybe. Not many other places. So you got to go create that.
You got to go create it. Go find it. It's there.
You have to go out and take some risks.
All right, Ben. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Let's go to the 5 leadership abilities, starting with simplify. Ben's core philosophy is permission-based simplicity. Build the firm you want, not the legal profession tells you what it should look like. He flipped the traditional hierarchy entirely. Owner happiness first, employee happiness second, client service third, and his time management follows the same logic. No unplanned inbound calls. Everything is scheduled, hard-nosed to distractions. His final advice distills 42 years down to one action. Find someone ahead of you who's already solved the problem and ask them. Next, the ability to delegate. Everything depended on him, which stole time from his family and made scaling impossible. The breakthrough came in layers, bringing his son Brian in as an integrator and 50-50 partner, his wife Sandy handling the books, his daughter-in-law Krista running HR, and eventually outsourcing work he didn't enjoy to staff in the Philippines. The real proof of elevation, delegate and elevate, his triple bypass at 66. The firm didn't miss him. The team didn't need him. And that was the moment succession planning validated itself in real time. And thankfully, he's okay. Next is predict. Ben saw early that good marketing would create a downstream problem. More clients than one lawyer could possibly handle. Rather than waiting for that ceiling to arrive, he started looking for mentorship, who was Dan Kennedy, and eventually a system, which was EOS, before the firm broke. He also predicts people. He's clear that not everyone grows with you through each level of the business, and leaders have to make those calls before resentment sets in. The next leadership ability is systemize, and Ben resisted EOS at first. He tried self-implementing and got stuck. Hiring implementer Randy Tausig and then Ross Foca really changed everything. The systems that came out of it, the level 10 meetings, documented hiring processes, HR operating roles, scheduled office hours, actually freed him from tasks that he was bad at or hated. Moving from gut feel to a documented process is the through line. He co-authored a book on time management with Dan Kennedy, and so systemizing how he spends his own time is just as deliberate as how the firm runs. And lastly, structure. The visionary integrator split is the firm's structural backbone. Ben is the visionary. Brian is the integrator with real authority, not just the title. And that distinction, giving family members actual decision-making power, not just proximity to it, is what makes the structure function. EOS gave the whole thing a formal operating framework, clear seats, clear roles, clear meeting cadence. And the result is a firm that now runs without Ben being present, which was just totally unthinkable when it was just him and one part-time assistant.